Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Surviving Sister Wives contains adult content that may not be suitable for Latter-day Saints or sinners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to Surviving Sister Wives.
I'm Corey.
And I'm Carly, and this is Seeking Sister Wife, Season 5, Episode 6, Seeking Commitment. And we are joined today by Dr. Adam of the Sister Wives Professor podcast.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, hello. We are so happy to have you on the show, Dr. Adam. And I know we were so close to a crossover before, and now we finally got to that point. And
yeah,
the schedules have aligned.
The stars have aligned.
Very much.
So excited to talk about Seeking Sister Wife in particular, because the dynamics on this show are crazy and very different depending on the couple. So excited to hear your takes on them as well.
I've got takes. You want takes? Binders full of takes. That's a reference the kids are going to love. Yeah.
Right. So for season five, now, are you all caught up on season five too? Have you been following along on a week-by-week basis? Did you binge your way through it here to get caught up?
So I'm the worst. Yeah, I've been going through season two on my podcast, and more about that some other time. But yeah, for this purpose, I went through and just power-watched season five, and I don't know what happened to this show in seasons three and four, but they have decided to let their freak flag fly, and I am here for it. I love it.
So you're covering season two of Seeking Sister Wife right now, and then we also saw you posted a Welcome to Plathville episode, which we're very, very excited about.
Yes, I just couldn't. So I had a Patreon for a while, and it was great, and it just, you know, circumstances, the ground shifted. Anybody who pays attention to Sister Wives knows exactly what I'm talking about. And so the main drivers of my Patreon, I didn't feel it was appropriate to create that kind of content anymore. Ipso facto, I had been covering Plathville as one of the, you know, one of the tiered benefits, but it was taking me a long time because I was doing like one episode a month because I was doing so much other stuff. And somebody a while back, even on Patreon, I can't remember their name. I apologize if you're listening to this. But said, like, Adam, you know, this is really good. It's almost kind of a shame you're paywalling it. And shame is my primary emotion. So that really hit me where I live. And so that just stuck with me. And I thought, you know, as I'm trying to keep people engaged and give people something to listen to who subscribe, I thought, you know, I have all these notes on the first season of Welcome to Plathville. Why don't I redo it? So, you know what I mean? So everybody's getting something relatively fresh. I'm not just reusing something old, but I am obsessed with the Plath family.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. We'll have to talk about them sometime because
yes, please.
The well runs deep in terms of content being able to talk about the Plaths.
Well, yeah, and you want to talk about dynamic shifts, too. If you look at season one to where they are now, very, very different landscape just in that show in general.
Yes, it's kind of like in a comic book or a sci-fi movie where somebody comes from, like, the future and, like, it, like, warns everyone, like, you have no idea how bad it's going to get. I feel like that, but, like, with the Plath family in real life, it's... Like Mercy Plath is going to come back into season one and be like, we have to stop what's about to happen.
But there is no way to stop it.
There is no way.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, let's jump in for today's episode. Season 5, episode 6, Seeking Commitment. The TLC description for this one is, the Merrifields prepare to propose to Natalia. That was a really hard sentence to say, though. The Salahuddins blindside Naeem's mother with unexpected news. The Sherwoods go on a group date with Sarah. The Ryans make a heartbreaking realization about Stephanie. And I mean, some of this is accurate. Well, first we got really confused because we were like, did they recycle the description from last week? But we just realized that it was Monday night's episode from last week that we had already watched when we were starting to take the notes. And then we were like, oh, that makes...
We're gluttons for punishment and watched it multiple times.
It makes sense now. So much sense.
But doesn't that tell you how great this show is that we're eager to watch the next episode already?
It's nice to have that feeling again. Mm-hmm. I haven't had that feeling with a new, like, current show in quite some time because I'm so into, especially for the podcast, all I do is binge old stuff. So I kind of get my fill pretty quickly. But when I reached the end of season five, I was like, oh, no, wait, no. What's going to go? Like, who's going to stand up who next?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
You ready for a rewrite?
Oh, yeah.
Of the description?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Becky is self-diagnosed with a case of phantom gonorrhea. Naeem's mother delights in his failed relationship. Garrick and Danielle get intimate with Roberta number two. Shane asks Sarah about her intentions with his wife.
Oh, boy. The phantom gonorrhea, I think that's that's the top tier content that we were looking for this season. Oh, my goodness. It's the Ryan family. I always want to say that his name is Ryan, but his name is Justin. Justin Ryan.
It's one of those issues where you have a first name as your last name.
Yeah. Well, and you want to talk about comic book superhero names. I guess Justin Ryan kind of sounds like a like a Marvel alias.
It's like something Stan Lee came up with. Yeah. And yeah. Interestingly enough, Carly, Phantom Gonorrhea was my band in high school. So
love it. You know, it took me a long time to choose which SDI I was going to put in there. So I'm glad we landed on that one.
You care about your craft, and it comes through.
I do. Thank you.
Yes.
Who do we want to start with?
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like we can't jump into, like, the Merrifields yet. So.
Yeah, that's the golden family for this season.
How about we pick up with Ryan's? Because they left us on a cliffhanger last episode.
It was a cliffhanger. I think the most off-putting thing, we're still trying to piece together what bothers us most about Justin and Becky. And there are the obvious things to go grab right out the gate. And they are very surface level complications, I think. But Dr. Adam, what is your overall take on just Justin and Becky, their dynamic, their relationship right now?
You know, that's a great question. It's funny because when I first started looking at this show, specifically season two, I thought, well, this is nice. At least it's not the traditional memed swinger thing where the guy is sitting in a dark corner of the bar sending his wife out to go cold call women at the bar. And then that literally happened.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, there it is. These folks are fascinating because the choices they make in this particular episode and the way they justify them, I took so many notes about handling, like, this is how you don't handle being ghosted. You do not travel cross country to, like, sort of show up at someone's home without consent. You know, I don't recommend it.
Yeah, the ambush approach,
they're scary. That's my vote, and I have a lot of thoughts about what happens with Stephanie in this episode because wow. So we pick up and they're at Stephanie's doorstep, or at least Becky is. It's raining, she's standing out there, like you said, she's unannounced. Now you got me saying Ryan.
I know.
Justin's sitting in the truck just waiting to find out what's going to happen, because that would be too intimidating, right, for him to come to the door too. We just send Becky up. That's much less scary.
Do you think that in their mind this is playing out like the end of Say Anything, though, where like he has the boombox over his head and he's playing the music, and that was what they thought this was going to come off as, but that's not what the message that is being sent here. This is way more of an intimidation factor that's playing out, I think.
Yeah, I think in a relationship or in the dissolution of a relationship, anytime that you are acting out of grievance, you're not going to make good choices, if that makes sense. It's like, this is like the mutant version of somebody sends you a breakup text and you write back a really long one about how you never liked them and they were actually always ugly to begin with. Like, you're not doing what you think you're doing. You know what I mean? You're acting out of pain and vulnerability and trying to turn that into strength. This crossed way more lines than that even, you know what I mean? And I don't recommend that behavior either, but it just felt like, what is, to your point, Corey, what is the positive outcome that you both feel like you might get from this? That's what I was wondering. Like, what do you think is going to occur on television to behave in this manner? It was, if this happened to me, like any, like, I don't like people showing up trying to sell me a security system, let alone like folks that, you know, I've been trying to dissolve a relationship with. Holy Hannah, it was weird.
I will give them credit, because at least Justin had the consciousness to be able to tell that, like, it doesn't look like this conversation is going very well at the door. I thought about going up to the door myself, but I decided not to because it didn't look like a very good conversation was happening. So credit where credit is due. That is about as much credit as I'm willing to give in this episode.
I was going
to
say, people say I'm too kind on my podcast. You're really setting the bar even higher. This was like when my wife has to send back my burger at a restaurant because I have too much social anxiety to say that I said no pickles, except gone horribly wrong. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, don't get me wrong. Like, he definitely has Family Annihilator vibes. So, I mean, that is something to consider here, because I don't know what is his obsession with. There's a direct association that happened a lot in the last episode and then a lot in this episode where he has a very direct association between love and death. And I don't think he's a fan of The Used. I think it comes from a darker place than that.
Yeah, he's just going to take it away. To the one person out there that got that, other than the people on this podcast, the Sister Wives Professor at gmail.com. Let's share Spotify playlists.
Taste of Chaos coming to a city near you. Probably.
Yeah, he's probably carrying a box full of sharp objects. There's no doubt
exactly
about
what's going on.
So Stephanie tells Becky some bad news, which is that she is now in a relationship with someone who she told them was just a friend. There was nothing between them other than that. But now that's it. He's here. He's in the house presently. You need to leave. And I don't want to be in a relationship with you two anymore because I've moved on with Greg.
Greg. Yeah. And I feel like this is just the shield. This is the I have a boyfriend
100%
excuse when someone's hitting on you at the bar or at the club and please don't talk to me anymore. I've expressed that I do not have interest in this pursuing any further, but you're not getting the message, so I'm going to have to give you a different excuse.
And I really like that Becky used the terminology, you told me you didn't love him in a sexual way, which is at one of my favorite things are sentences that on their face actually make complete sense, and yet they just sound completely nuts. Like, that's one of them. It's like, I thought you didn't love him in a sexual way. Like, are you saying what I think you're saying? But yeah, it gave me this feeling of like, when I was in grad school and my friend would hold my hand under the table and squeeze it three times. And that was our secret signal for you're my fake boyfriend now. This guy is talking to me. Yeah, that was definitely the vibe I got. And hey, maybe she and Greg are going to live, you know, which that's not his name, but we found out, but right. Maybe they're going to live happily ever after. But it's one of those things where, again, whether or not Greg is really in a relationship with her, or if she's faking a relationship with Greg, all the more reason to come to the conclusion that this is not a sustainable relationship for the two of you.
And the bigger question, do we think that Greg was actually there at the time? Or is this also just another defense thing that she has to go with? Stephanie does not feel safe in this situation. She knows that Justin and Becky have showed up unannounced at her door against her will. So now she has to bluff and say Greg is in the house and he breeds Rottweilers and he is listening. Well, he's not listening directly to this conversation, but he's within earshot where I could get his attention and he will come protect me if need be. But I don't know. Was he even there?
He's here, just slightly off frame. Look, he's got a souffle, and if the thing collapses, I'm going to have to spend all night rebuilding his emotions. So, like, just let's let him be.
This poor woman was, like, ready to text 911. I feel like that's what was happening here. She knew that these psychos drove 12 hours to get here and that they were calling her nonstop to try to get a hold of her. And she came up with every excuse she could possibly make to keep them out of that house.
And Stephanie, meanwhile, is on the phone with Orange Theory Fitness, wondering why her credit card has been charged against her will. And come to find out, that was Justin and Becky last week.
Do you think they drove back and canceled her membership?
I think that's the other vindictive thing that happens with Justin and Becky, where they're seeing this as they're putting so much into the relationship, but the things that they're contributing are the purchases and the... they're trying to buy this woman.
They're manipulating her. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's just very uncomfortable and awkward when it comes right down to it.
Right.
Well, we can't forget, like, the best part of the interaction, which is when she accuses... Well, I guess, is it an accusation? It kind of is. Against Greg, right?
more so against Greg.
That now Becky needs to know, do I need to go get tested now? What she wants to know was there overlap between these relationships that took place. And Stephanie's like, are you fucking kidding me?
it's just an excuse to overreach and overstep on Stephanie's sexual history here. Because now Becky needs timelines. She needs evidence. She needs proof of, where she needs to go and talk to her doctor about these circumstances.
Can we talk about personal responsibility, though, in this type of relationship? That's not something that's been on your radar anyway to be doing regularly?
It seems like, that could probably be something.
She thought it was a dig at Stephanie.
Is it the insult that's taking place there of, is Greg the only one that we should be concerned about? Because you've mentioned that you are... as Dr. Adam pointed out, no longer sexually in love with him, I guess, in that way. So
I feel like we should call him George Glass. We shouldn't even call him Greg. He's fictional.
Is he real?
I gotta say, like, divorced from everything, like, the concern about the STIs and even more so the vindictive canceling of a gym membership from your now ex, those things I can somewhat relate to cognitively and emotionally, but again, it's just the wrong messengers because, as you said, Carly, like, that's probably with the lifestyle, it's probably something you should be doing, pretty consistently in terms of checking up on yourself. I endorse that for anybody. But yeah, we are paying the $18.99 a month gym membership being this major sticking point. As much as I get a lot of credit that I don't deserve for being, like, a thoughtful person, I am to my core petty. And so when I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to get on the phone and cancel her gym membership. I kind of perked up. I'm like, yeah, there you go. There you go, lunatic. Like, have at it. And
finally, we're making decisions that we can all understand.
Yes. This, at least the only thing on this show I relate to, is just that vindictive moment, or at least the impulse. But Becky is, she's one of those folks too, that her veneer is so sweet. You know what I mean? She comes across, she's got this, like, this resting smile and her face and her facial expressions, which is one of the things that I study and I talk about on my podcast, is the nonverbal presentations. And when we as human beings see presentations of emotion that all of a sudden don't track to us as genuine anymore, we tend to become very uncomfortable, if that makes sense. Like, if somebody's smiling, but all of a sudden you realize, I think that smile is fake, or when someone seems upset, but you kind of clock that maybe they're faking a negative emotion, whether it be to get out of a situation or to absolve themselves of guilt. Like, we don't like that. And Becky has started to give me those vibes. Like, Justin, at least, is like leaning into like full on Luke Bryan fan human Eeyore thing. Like, he's very consistent, at least. So, yeah, I don't know.
I feel like his is neutral. Like, I don't get a lot from Justin. And I think that's what makes us so nervous, is because I know that there's anger in there, because that's all veiled and surfaced over with the appeasable cover that he goes with for dealing with most of his troubles that he's coming across here. Because even in this episode, he's very upset, but he's not really displaying that in typical ways. He's talking about it, but he's not really showing that.
I think they're both very aware of the fact that they're on camera.
Yeah,
that's probably it.
They're putting on a facade of how they feel like they should be reacting. Like, even Becky, right? Becky's pissed in this episode, but she keeps trying to appear as though she's still like positive.
She melted down a little bit in the car, because when she first jumped back in the car and Justin's like, "Oh, how did that go?" It did not go well.
Well, I feel like her mask kind of fell in this episode. Yeah,
absolutely.
Then she doesn't want to even tell him what happened. And
right?
I don't even think it's about telling him, because she makes it about like, I'm not going to be the messenger of what Stephanie had to say. She's not going to put me in that position to tell you. She's got to tell you firsthand. No. My opinion on this is that she needs there to be a reason for Justin to reach back out to Stephanie once again. So she's not going to tell him what happened and end the relationship that way. They've got to have another door open again to have more communication with this woman who has made it very clear that she does not want to continue to talk to them.
It's a manipulation tactic to keep the conversations going with this person who has very clearly chosen to go no contact with you anymore. But this gives the excuse. And even Justin was like, okay, that's not going to fly this time, because just you need to tell me what was said, because clearly Stephanie is not going to tell me.
Right. Right. And it's funny because Justin so much seems to use Becky as his channel to things, right? As much as he does seem to be like harboring a lot of emotion that's kind of locked down, he's always kind of sending Becky off to go do things, right? To go have these interactions and report back. It's fascinating to me. And then she kind of, as you said, refused to do it. And I think you hear like, I don't know if y'all ever had like friends' houses you would go over to, and like the mom or the dad was like the super fun mom or dad and super gregarious, but then the switch would get hit and your friend, or if this might have been you, would get in trouble, and like the veneer of like the fun parent just drops and you're like, whoa, okay, wow, this is a different person. Mm-hmm. That's like what I can equate it to, is you hear Becky's tonality and her pitch, everything in her voice. I'm not trying to exaggerate, she sounds like a different person in her voice when she's talking about, now I have to go get tested and this stuff with Greg. Like, the voice is so different because she is, I think, very presentational on camera. And to be fair, I think that that's the smart move. You know, some folks on this and other shows, and I've heard you both comment on this, some folks, you kind of go, you don't necessarily have much media training or experience. Mm-hmm. You're kind of coming across. And I find that typically endearing, right? Depending on the person. But yeah, the mask, the veneer dropped, and it really is one of those illustrative things of how little we see from people on reality TV shows and how little we actually know them.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we're left with, at least they got a hotel room. They're not going to drive another 12 hours straight back when they're all upset now and sad. But depression be gone next week. They're going to pray that away as soon as they get home. So they should be all set by next week's episode to, I'm sure, date again, because we already saw that in the preview for the next episode.
Right.
They're back out there trying to find wife number two.
No doubt about it. They are ready to get hurt again.
Ready.
So I love that you talked a little bit already about people's like reactions on their faces versus the emotions that they're feeling. I feel like that's a great lead in to the Merrifields. We have to talk about Garrick and Danielle and Natalia, who we lovingly call Roberta number two. Mm-hmm. So this episode is hot off the heels of Garrick getting caught on multiple dating apps. So things don't really seem to be going very well on this trip to meet Natalia for the first time. Yet we're ready to move this relationship forward.
To propose.
Proposal is in the air, but Garrick doesn't want to propose first. Well, he can't propose first without having Danielle sort of pave the way for him. So she's going to soft launch the proposal to Natalia, and it's going to be a sister-to-sister proposal. And the gift that she bestows as part of this, because again, there's a little bit of bribery that has to happen here too. But this is kind of the Clotta ring of the Merrifield family, if you will,
okay,
because this is Garrick's jewelry design, which there seems to be a lot of crossover between polygamous families and jewelry design.
You can't see my notes. You can't see my notes, but I had so much fun with his My Sister Wife's Closet, like, spiel about this. I just thought, what am I doing? The Venn diagram of my life keeps getting, like, smaller and smaller. Like, it overlaps more and more all the time. See, it's like a heart, but it's two S's.
Yeah, we're going to talk in depth about the design.
Yeah, because it's a Garrick original.
Which apparently he does a lot of. Because he designed the ring, too.
He designs the actual
engagement.
So he's
been busy. He's been busy designing jewelry in addition to everything else they do, right? Because do they build houses, too?
I think so, yeah. He's a very creative soul, I guess. This, again, if we're trying to make light of it and we're trying to look at the positives here, that's where I can give him a little bit of credit, just in creativity alone. But on this specific design, it wasn't an original design. We find out that this is an exact duplicate copy of what was given to Roberta number one, the original Roberta. And this was kind of their goal in general, was to give each wife this exact necklace.
I have to point out that they were fans of Sister Wives, because Danielle and Garrick have been doing lives on Instagram after these episodes aired, and they talked about how they used to watch Sister Wives. So they are very well aware of the Clotta ring tradition within the Brown family. So I do think that they tried to recreate that for themselves.
But what would compel you, out of any time spent viewing Sister Wives, to also venture into that? Did you see how successful it was? Wildly successful that My Sister Wife's Closet was, that you just had to go.
Do you think the long-term plan is for them to sell this to the public? I don't think so.
I wouldn't rule it out necessarily.
I would say it's nicer materials than My Sister Wife's Closet jewelry. We had some color.
I don't know that long-term plan really fits within the context of this particular family, I guess. It's very much like sunken cost fallacy, although the sunken cost is almost negligible, but it's like, look, you know, we drove all the way here. If I don't propose, you know, what's the point? I flew all the way here. Like, you know, I got to propose at this point. And who among us hasn't regifted a custom necklace from one failed polygamous wife to the next? I mean, that's, you talk about reduce, reuse, recycle. That man's a hero.
I guess at least he did not come up with personalized designs.
Well, that didn't work out for Cody either.
No, this is a good idea. We've got something that's easily reproducible that we could use.
Mass producing. The design itself, though, can we take a minute and talk about? I did take a picture of it just so I can look at it again and talk through it in detail. Because, okay, I get what they're going for. Where there's
is it the wallpaper on your phone now?
It will be after this. But there's okay, so there's the heart-shaped diamonds, because obviously they have to be heart-shaped because there's love involved here. And how else do you convey love except through hearts? They decided to not go butt to butt. They went tip to tip. So that, I guess, is an improvement over Robin's designs. And then they had infinity symbol in red stones around the hearts that kind of intertwine them. Now, the part that I don't get is the overall overlapping border that goes around it, which looks like the juicy lips, you know, like
it's got early 2000s vibes.
Like you didn't need that. Like it could have just been the diamonds, the heart diamonds and the infinity symbol on a chain. Like that would have been it. That would have been your pendant that you could have done this with, but now there's all of this extra border that's going on too.
We've really become critics of jewelry design, have we not?
I guess so. I didn't know that I was internalizing all of that.
It's very large. It's very large. There's a lot going on. I question the two hearts. How do we make that? There are going to be five wives, right? So not everybody can be represented here. And that's a problem for the Cody Brown family. We have to represent the entire family in anything that we do.
So maybe that's what Garrick has learned, is that this is about the individual relationship between each wife and him. So the representation of those hearts, that is the wife and the husband relationship that's being celebrated there.
I think much like Cody Brown, Garrick really looks at things and goes, that's a problem for future me. And future me is going to handle it just fine. And I have no idea how. And there you go. Yeah, I think that, you know, at the very least, he didn't pitch, you know, a sterling silver dog because she's so loyal. That's something.
The Fidelis, you know, bone.
I just think I'm grading on it's the Brown family, whom I love and I support, have caused me to grade on such a steep curve when it comes to jewelry design that I thought, you know what? Fine. This looks like if the Clockwork Orange Garrick in a chair and had him look at like 500 Lisa Frank folders, I feel like this is what he would have come up with. And I support that.
Well, let's talk about what happened after that moment there. I almost called her Roberta again. It was Natalia accepts the necklace, but then Danielle wants to seal the deal with a kiss. And she leans in for the kiss, and Natalia has to abruptly turn away.
She recoils.
Reject the advances of Danielle and just repeatedly say, no kisses, no kisses, no kisses. In complete fear and terror of what's happening here.
Again, who hasn't been there? Like, you guys are so judgmental. Like,
physical reaction. Oh, my goodness.
This is a big question, though, right? Is like, what is Danielle's purpose in this relationship? Does she want to have a relationship with her sister wife? Do they go weird, as the Browns would say? Where is the line drawn? And I feel like Roberta number two had a moment there where she was like, oh, fuck, like, wait. Is that the expectation of this relationship? Because I only want one with Garrick.
Right. There seems to be a pattern in this show in particular across the seasons I've seen where just in this season in particular, with almost every family, there's this sense of they haven't really set parameters about what they are or aren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And we'll see that with some other families that I'm sure we'll talk about from the episode, but and you probably know where I'm going with this, but of just like, who is this person supposed to be? Like, what are our ultimate goals to get to, like, the end game within reason of what this family is supposed to look like so that maybe people stop moving out because they're really upset about things, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's so important. And the more you complicate things, whether it's adding additional adults to a family situation or having more kids, it's you don't know necessarily right where you're going to end up, but you need to have, like, okay, here is my vision for this. What about you? And so that just felt like, again, like, how much do you know these people? What conversations have you had? Like, these are kind of foundational things, right? Of the, do we go weird or not? And like, I'm a fan of weird. You want to go weird and everyone consents? Go weird as hell. Just don't hurt anybody. You know what I mean? But you got to kind of make that pretty clear. Maybe before the proposal cross-continental trip that you're going on together. I don't know.
Get everybody on the same page. And that seems to be the shared dilemma in a lot of these relationships, is that there are no established rules. There's not checking in to see where everybody's at as part of this journey that's supposed to be happening together, but we see some people are kind of inspired and continue to push the boundaries of what they're exploring, whether their partners are available and ready for that as well.
Well, a lot of them are making it up as they go, right? And that's not really a great strategy from what we're seeing. So it's time for the proposal.
Yeah, I was going to say, but what about Garrick's Portuguese? Because can we band together and start a campaign to get him like a Babbel account?
You guys, they replayed it like 5 times too. Like, I was like, please stop showing this to me. So many times we had to hear it. Like, one time I was like, oh, you tried. And then they replayed it again and again and again. And it's like seventh grade Adam going like, you know, ¿Dónde está la biblioteca? In front of the girl I had a crush on or something. I'm like, it just tapped into something I didn't want to go back to in my life.
That was better. That was better than what we heard from Garrick and years of experience here. Well, we know that he doesn't have room on his phone. It's full of dating apps. He doesn't have room for any translator apps or, you know, any other sort of Duolingo or anything like that.
Wasn't that incredible? It was like the verbal equivalent of the Black Knight from Monty Python, just getting one limb after another just hopped off and him going, I can still fight. I'll bite your legs off. Like, it was like amazing.
You know what it sounded like? There's an episode of Seinfeld where Kramer is a Santa Claus at a department store around the holidays, and a girl comes up and sits in his lap, and he asks her what she wants for Christmas. And then her parents quickly tell him, oh, she doesn't speak English. And Kramer says, oh, don't worry, Santa speaks the language of all children. And then he just starts speaking in gibberish to her, but in the pattern and the same rhythm, delivery style that Garrick was speaking Portuguese, where it was minha do si po si pa si. And it was just that bouncing kind of gibberish, basically, that was going on, where it was Yorkie dorky porky sporky. Like, that
he
was exactly
spoke
it.
Portuguese like a goddamn Cocoa Melon song.
You would think, like, if he has been dating Brazilian women for a number of years now, right?
With great success.
Great, amazing success. If you were going to invest in learning any bit of Portuguese, wouldn't this sentence be the one that you would really practice?
You've already asked it to someone
right.
else.
I guess that's the other unbelievable part of it, right? This is the second time that he's done this. This should be improvement.
Well, he did add the sweet rose part, so I guess those were a couple new words. It's expanding the vocabulary a little too rapid of a pace for him, maybe.
The roses. So we're going to propose we have a ring that looks like a rose, and then we're going to have 11 roses because Roberta number 2 is rose number 12. What about Danielle?
Danielle's in the background.
I feel like she was forgotten. Why were there not 10 roses and they both complete this dozen?
She's not a rose. Yeah. I mean, she did wear... I'm just saying
it signifies perhaps... Yeah. You know, Garrick not really including Danielle in these relationships.
Well, no shit.
It might have been from that spiritual journey that Garrick went on, where God talked to him not only in his garage, but also on a mountaintop one time, where God was sending Garrick a sweet rose to complete their family. And then What's the Seal song, right? That's what keeps coming to mind for me. Kiss from a Rose, right?
Yes.
That's got to be it. So that's, they couldn't buy the rights to that, but that's what you could probably overlay with the engagement,
playing in the background.
The proposal scene. Yeah, that's what the editors used in the rough cut to pace the edit for them.
Tia, TLC doesn't have Batman Forever soundtrack money.
No,
okay,
they
let's
don't.
Be honest about that.
No, they
yeah,
do
my
not.
Favorite thing about Garrick, and I love many things about Garrick and his weird brain sperm, is whenever any logical counterpoint is brought up by his very patient wife as to why things maybe don't make sense, Garrick kind of goes, okay, counterpoint God, and then like drops a ninja smoke bomb and disappears from the room.
And then Danielle has to go, yeah, God. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, God again. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it's, yep, my fault.
I forgot.
She did seem genuinely excited during the
she
proposal.
Did. She did.
She, which was odd. I feel like she must have really sat in a room by herself for a few hours leading up to this and put on her best. Maybe she had a couple of glasses of that champagne before Garrick brought it out there.
Well, Carly, she was pre-gaming so hard this proposal. Like, let's be honest.
That was why she went in for the smooch. Yeah, she was a little loosey-goosey.
Tipsy already earlier
yeah.
that day.
Yeah.
Must have been.
She was pounding some Milwaukee's Best before this whole thing got going. It was necessary for, like, one way or the other, I'm getting something out of this. Like, gonna dull the pain or enhance the joy.
And then, yeah, she has to ask, did she say yes? And I don't know if Garrick was completely sure if she said yes, because again, the man doesn't speak Portuguese, not a single word.
He's also not very familiar with like caring about if your wives are okay with something. It doesn't seem like so.
Yeah, because he forgot to invite Danielle over to celebrate too. Danielle had to interject, like reminding him, yeah, hello, hey, I'm over here. Did she say yes? Can I come over now? And he's like, oh, right, Danielle, yeah.
You're still here.
Yeah, come on over. She said yes.
I don't think they really cared. There was never, I think, a moment in their mind where they thought that she was going to say no. At least Garrick didn't, because God told him that this was the plan.
Well, it's just interesting, though, because Natalia's first thought when they were dressed up and heading out to the deck where he was going to make the proposal, she was asking, are we going to the restaurant?
Oh, Corey.
Was it a joke?
That was bullshit. She knew what was happening.
Oh, okay.
You think so? See, I have no bullshit detector on these shows. That's what I learn whenever I talk to Carly and you too. I'm always like, oh gosh, this really happened. And you guys are always the ones that, oh, that's staged. That's bullshit. You gotta think critically, son. You knew what this.
I feel like this one with Natalia, I feel like that was a legitimate
No,
call.
She knows like it's the last night that yeah. they're there.
And she's like, oh, you're going to just propose to me on the deck? We're not even going to go out to dinner?
That
first?
I could see. That I could see.
Like, it was insulting almost. But then she still says yes.
You think she wanted to be wined and dined?
Yes, I do.
She was like, you make that custom home builder money and you're not even taking my ass to TJI Fridays or whatever we have here. Like, come
on. It's an all-inclusive resort and you're not going to take me to dinner first? I'm offended.
Fair point. Well, they're engaged now, so green lights to move forward in this relationship, because they don't have to wait for an actual, like, legally binding or spiritually binding marriage of any kind to take place. So we are finally at the moment that Garrick has been excited for since they booked these plane tickets.
He's so horny, you guys. He's so horny. And Garrick has two modes. Well, three. There's God? Stare blankly into space, and I am so horny. And he really just kind of, and they are not mutually exclusive.
Right.
Sometimes he shifts into two of them. But yeah, that, and like, you know, and the getting caught lying is kind of the stare blankly into space kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So.
But also some horniness thrown in there too. Maybe that just makes the confused horniness a little bit.
His baseline horny is quite high.
It's very high.
Yeah.
Well, and he's just the type of person who, it's striking me as, this is a guy who's just looking for excuses to cheat on his current wife. Well, now divorcee wife, even though they're still together, him and Danielle. Because she did the whole legal divorce thing for Roberta number one. But
they have watched Sister Wives.
They have. I know, right? The lessons learned, for sure. What I will never forgive Garrick for, of all of these things, all the terrible things that we've listed out, all the annoying things, top to bottom, what is the most unforgivable thing? He's packing his suitcase on the bed. It's on the bed. The wheels and everything. It's on the bed. I can't look past it. I will never forgive him for that. because it's the night before they're going to leave. And then he's going to bang Natalia on the bed that he just had his dirty suitcase all over.
They're
going to
get the sheets dirty anyway. What does he care?
Now they're going to have to get tested. Somebody call Becky and let her know. It's not safe in here.
Strong feelings about that, huh?
I would never get over that.
I'm just putting the pieces together here in my head of like...
I
wish my wife was in the room right now to hear you complain about the luggage thing, because she would be standing up and applauding like the end of like Rudy or something. Like, she would be so pleased. So I can't wait for her to hear your grievances aired that echo her so much, because I am just human garbage. And so I'm just like, you know, rub some dirt on it and it's fine. Or not anymore. The transformative power of love is very important, as I'm sure you two of all people understand. But yeah, that never would have occurred to me. But I've literally eaten food out of dumpsters at certain points in my life. So, you know, it's fine. It's all relative.
I've done that too. I've eaten food out of dumpsters.
You draw the line at the luggage on the bed.
Don't try and high road me here. Yeah, come on. We've all been there. But no, it's the wheels. I just imagine all the places that suitcase has been. I know where the suitcase has been.
It's been to Mexico multiple times.
I have pulled this suitcase up to an airport urinal to go to the restroom. I do not want that on the bed. I know where this has been. It's terrible.
Well, I didn't mean to upset anybody this much. I'm really sorry.
This is just passion, and that's what's going into it.
A lot more passion than anyone on this television show for the people that they are ostensibly courting, especially the people being courted who seem to be anywhere from disinterested to openly hostile, which I also appreciate.
Were you so distracted by the suitcase that you didn't see Danielle sitting on the bed?
No.
She was parked there.
Danielle was the other thing that, yeah, you could not get out of the bed this episode because she wasn't moving.
I'm a softy. Maybe I'll change my mind as the series continues, but I'm such a, I don't even want to say apologist, but I have so much empathy or sympathy for Danielle, who just, you know, she's clearly consenting to the lifestyle. She's clearly consenting to the relationship based upon what we can see. And as you said, Carly, she seemed really joyful during the proposal situation, which is great because it balances out the other 99% of time where she just looks abjectly miserable. I don't know. It just hurts sometimes watching. I don't like to see people be uncomfortable, especially real people. I don't even like to see fictional people that uncomfortable unless it's like on The Office or something. And even then I kind of have to look away. But it really led me to wonder what, in the kiss situation, it's just interesting. I cannot put a feel on her motivation yet anyway.
I almost got the vibe that she wanted to stay and be there. But not, I don't even think she wants to participate. I think she just wants to know what's going on.
Because she doesn't trust what Garrick says happens.
Of course. Why would she? I just think she feels excluded, which is, she knows what happened when they went to Mexico with Roberta, where she left the room for 5 minutes and they managed to have an intimate moment in that short a period of time while she was gone.
Sealed the deal.
Dudes on this show will do that. They don't need much. Mm-hmm. They will find a way. Yeah. It's like Jurassic Park, but for, you know, perverted men.
She does finally leave the room, and we can only assume what took place that evening. And I just have a feeling that Natalia's days are numbered in this family now that Garrett got what he wanted.
She's going to die.
No, she's not dating the Ryans. She has nothing to worry about. But
I want to lead within this family next time. Lead with the in this family part.
No, I think Garrick is just the type where he gets all horned up, and then as soon as he bangs it out, he has lost interest. Like, he's just not going to be as enamored with Natalia anymore after this.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
We're going to have to see. He's talking about planning a trip to Brazil. They're going to go try to have the wedding happen there so that they could get her visa in place, that she can come to the U.S. I still have a lot of questions about what her motive is, and I'm hopeful that we will see that play out.
And they want more wives too, right? Like Garrick at least has been quite clear that this is not the end of the configuration, shall we say, of their family, which again, I don't know that Natalia necessarily seems to know about.
Right.
So we'll see.
And that was the sticking point with Roberta number one, because they did the same thing to her, where she thought she was getting ready to come over to live with them. And all of a sudden they started dating someone else and she was very uncomfortable with that. And then it kind of just fell apart from there.
So Natalia might find out that, yeah, she's part of the Five Wives Burgers and Fries franchise that Garrick has still been working on all these years.
Yeah. Brings new meaning to fuck around and find out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Should we cover the Salahuddins? Because they're in this episode for all about five minutes.
Yeah, it's so brief. All of theirs have just been like one scene that you get per episode here. Because the storyline, it seems like it's moving kind of slow. They did get stood up, so that usually tends to slow things down. But now
what
the drama.
Shock.
Right, yeah. Again? Oh, no. So now the drama seems to be building just between the Salahuddin family and Naeem's mother, specifically, Jamila.
Yeah, and they had a whole weekend planned for when Keisha was supposed to be here, because this was supposed to be a dinner to ambush his mom, so that she would have to meet Keisha, even though she's made it very clear that she's uncomfortable with them living polygamy and she doesn't want to meet anyone who would be a potential partner.
Do you think they saw how it went with the Snowdens and Mama Donna in season two and how Vanessa was able to win over Mama Donna by crying and stuff? And they're like, oh, I got a plan here.
We're just going to sneak up on her. We're going to invite her over without knowing. I'm surprised that Jamila still came in and was still at the couch and didn't think that maybe they were messing with her and then they were going to bring her out like the Jerry Springer show, where it was going to be like, oh yeah, she stood us up. And then she starts talking all the shit about, oh, it's good that you guys didn't and you missed out on that opportunity. And then they're like, oh, actually she's right here. And then she would have come out and that would have been the confrontation for the entire episode. I feel like that
would have been great, because been the something. Absolute brutality of this woman was such a breath of fresh air, where they're like, well, it kind of didn't work out. And she's like, good.
That was it.
Yeah. She is very much celebrating in their failure. She's very happy to hear that it did not work out for them. And she thinks that that means that they're putting this to bed, right? Now we can move on from that silliness.
Oh, thought so.
Yeah. We're not going to be doing that anymore, but she would be wrong.
Yeah, I really appreciate just the absolute lack of respect she has for their lifestyle. Not because I share it, but it's just so refreshing, because we saw earlier in the season, right? I think it was Garrick's brother-in-law, I want to say, so gently when they're like at the site where they're building, he's so gently walking him through. So you're doing basically the exact same thing you did last time that ended terribly, huh, Powell? Do you think that makes a lot of sense? It's just nice to hear somebody go like, y'all are nuts. This is not going to work.
She definitely has a lot of opinions and she's going to be honest about them.
So that's good. Yeah. You need that.
I was most upset about the fact that this was supposed to be a dinner and at no point did they eat food. Did they just decide to scrap the whole thing because Keisha didn't show up?
Well, they already fulfilled the date that they were supposed to go on. When Keisha wasn't here on the last episode, it was just Naeem and Nyla going out for the dinner themselves.
That was a date between them, though, right?
Right.
And then this was supposed to be a separate thing where his mom came over and met her.
Yeah, the ambush dinner. But yeah, it didn't seem like there was a meal that was going on here. So maybe they just got into their argument about polygamy in the living room here, and then they decided to call this off short.
This show hates restaurants. Like, this is just no restaurants happening.
I did like that there was a Biggie Housie conversation here about, do we live in one house altogether, or are you supposed to live polygamy as, you know, you have separate wives, you have separate homes, they're kind of in a way separate lives. That's a debate that I don't know that we'll ever get to the bottom to on these shows.
Probably not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I have to tell you two something, really. This, y'all can cut this out if you want to. I have to tell you something, because I've been listening to your podcast for so long, and about 2.5 years ago, we were going to move to a larger home. And because of you two, I started offhand just to separate it in my kids' minds about what I was talking about. I referred to the house we were going to buy, which we live in now, as Biggie Housie.
Yes.
And so to this day, my 7-year-old will be like, I'll be like talking to him, or we'll be walking around or playing Mario Kart. And I'm like, I'm so glad we moved to Biggie Housey. I'm like, me too, pal.
Oh, and my, like, God, I love that story. Thank you for thank you for sharing that with us.
And like my 4-year-old too, he's like, I was little, and then when I was 2, we moved to Biggie Housey. And I'm like, we sure did, pal. And so if you ever wonder if your podcast changes like the youth of America for the better, it really has. Can't believe I never told you that before. Yeah, just you don't think it becomes normal. You hear it so much, you don't think about it anymore. But I'm like, oh yeah, that's from Surviving Sister Wives. Because like whatever y'all are referencing, I have no idea. I just reference it, just reference you two. So.
Oh my gosh. We're done with them, right? They were so boring.
They were still boring.
Oh, God.
I
think so. Because then is it the Sherwoods?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. The Sherwoods. Wow. I'm excited that we have left them for last, because they have been the biggest question mark for us in this season so far. We could not get a read on them, I think, until the end of this episode.
They dropped a little clue. There's a little Easter egg breadcrumb that's at the end of this episode that they kind of glossed over very quickly, and it made everything line up in some of the theories that we were running through. So I think the confusing part is that it's kind of wishy-washy at the start of this, where it seems like Shane and Ashley are on the same page, and then they're not on the same page, but then they're coming up with different reasoning and different excuses and different theories that just don't align. So they're not holding each other accountable in those reasons. So that's what we were getting confused about, where this episode, it's basically Ashley is introducing Shane to Sarah, the new girl that Ashley has been dating. She went on one date at the park.
I was going to say, barely.
one date where they ate soup at a park bench. So, you know.
Then they did a little mackin'.
Yeah. So,
good for them, I say.
Yeah, it was good. So this is the second date.
Where Shane just like... What are your intentions with my daughter? Like times 100. Like it's the first time I've met you. The second date you've had with my wife, you know, I'm not going to make the same mistake everyone else does. Let's map out the next 30 years immediately, because I need to know everything. It just felt intense.
Yes. Yeah. It and was maybe jumping
early.
In
early.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And that seemed polar opposite to when Ashley introduced him to, oh gosh, what was her name? The other girl that
I've already
Ashley
forgotten
was
by now. Ugh, it was horrible.
It was not a good date. And so
she did not like Shane, I don't think.
No. And they didn't like each other. Yeah. So like that was, I guess Shane didn't really have to get too far into that as far as the questioning, the line of questioning that was going on, because he knew pretty quickly that she wasn't a good fit. So maybe he was kind of diving into this. I couldn't tell if this was just Shane trying to over intimidate Sarah to scare her away, if he's having second thoughts about this. It was just really confusing to me, because I wasn't understanding why Shane was going so hard on this line of questioning with Sarah in this episode.
I had a hypothesis, and that's all it is an educated guess, is that, and I'd love to obviously hear what you two think. It came across to me as Shane in this scenario, by the nature of what's going on with his wife, he's giving up a great deal of control in terms of what this will look like, because he's not the engine behind this. You know what I mean? Because so often in this show, even though polygamy is so often framed as the wife's idea to enter into, then the reins are typically handed over to the man to, you know, to court and engage sexually, romantically, whatever. And that's what makes this family so interesting, right? Is it's kind of the inverse of that. And I could see, I think Shane just has a lot of anxiety about this. He has spelled out a couple times. He's like, look, it's entirely possible that this, whoever this person is, could take my wife away from me. Like, she could choose this woman. And so my read on it was, this was a manifestation of his anxiety, is he's, human beings don't like uncertainty. We don't like the unknown, including relationally. And when you're a high anxiety person, or you're in a high anxiety situation, which I think for him this is, he's trying to, I think, gain as much certainty about things as fast as he can, which we, as the viewers know, isn't necessarily socially appropriate on the first time you meet somebody, you know, and the way he framed it too is, well, when we know about something, we just move really fast. And it's like, well, that's maybe true, but that doesn't mean that that's the right move for this person that you're ostensibly, that your spouse, I guess, is ostensibly courting. It just felt like to me, Shane was like trying to soothe himself by just gaining as much information and almost kind of locking down and defining the situation. That might be the word, as much as he could, as quickly as he could.
I think that's definitely part of it. But then, so the things that haven't added up about Shane have been, this seems, like you said, really driven by Ashley, right? Ashley wants to have a relationship with another woman. And it's almost like they're just trying to accommodate that. But Shane's participation in this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There seems to be a requirement that this person is going to have children with him so that all of the kids can be biologically related. But then he doesn't really seem to have a vested interest in who this person is. It's just like Ashley is going to choose this partner and then he's just going to make it work with them.
Yeah, and I think the confusing point that I had, well, is that clearly Shane is confused in this too, where he was asking Sarah these questions and then Sarah would give a response and then he would jump immediately to, well, it sounds like we're not looking for the same thing. But that wasn't the question that he asked. He asked about her dating experience. I'm glad that Sarah called him out on it.
Me too.
And yeah. She stuck to it where she was like, look, you asked me about my past experience.
Right.
I told you about my past. That's not what I'm talking about, what I'm currently seeking right now. So I did like that she was able to stand up for herself. Good on you for making that abundantly clear and circling back to, that was not the question that you asked me. Here's the answer to that.
Yeah. It was such bullshit. Because anybody else would be like, well, I have no experience with polygamy. Are you going to go, all right, well, I guess we're done here. Like, you know.
Yeah. So I think that was kind of part of it too, that confused me, was Shane's confusion where he was hearing answers that he wanted to hear to then dismiss Sarah.
Do you think he's looking for an out?
I wasn't sure at this point if he was having mixed emotions or if he was second guessing this or if he was having doubts. But then we did hear, so like after the date, after Sarah smacks him on the butt playfully and respectfully.
That was a choice.
So that was good.
That was a choice.
But in the conversation that he was having in the car with Ashley as they were driving home, and then we saw some confessional footage of him at home of kind of recounting the date, he had mentioned and glossed over, breezed by this very quickly, that he has some like health concerns, some pressing health concerns.
Yeah, that was wild, wasn't it?
So that was when we thought,
Now this all makes sense
about why perhaps
he seems so disengaged from wanting to have a relationship with this person, yet they're simultaneously in a rush to find someone who is going to permanently stick around and not waste their time with someone.
Yeah.
Because I thought the rush was for the baby, like because Ashley is pregnant. And I was like, are they just looking for help with the baby? No, that's not it.
That was a Robin Brown situation. It was.
Yeah, I thought so. Because, hey, I mean, you got to put two and two together on some things. But yeah, it didn't sound like that was the way that this was going.
It really was quite the teaser reveal. I almost like sat up straight from when I was watching and like I rewound it because I thought I don't know if I heard that right. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, it's in my notes too. I said, okay, this might be something different than, because my read on him was he was trying to find an out. He was trying to find a way to go, okay, this clearly isn't. And in it, those aren't mutually exclusive.
Right.
You know, you can have convinced yourself or truly believe something is the right thing and still sabotage it, you know, or look for a way discursively to not have it happen because you don't want to do it. But yeah, I will be very interested. This hooked me more for this show than seasons worth of other stuff because their dynamic is so different and because they're kind of drip feeding us. You know, you contrast this to, shall we say, some of the other folks on the show where I'm just like, I just disassociate for 20 minutes until we get to the next segment. But yeah, very interested.
Or like the Merrifields where you're drinking from a fire hose because there's just so much that they're throwing at you in every single scene. So yeah, this one is a little bit more spread out, and I feel like they've been sitting on some information. They're still withholding that, and that's why it's been so confusing and back and forth, because it's hard to get a read on this because we don't know their whole situation.
I'm going to make a prediction. So this gave me vibes. There's an episode of The Golden Girls where Sophia meets two people. It's a man and a woman.
I am fully invested. Talk about me sitting up straight. Okay, go. No, go.
This is like so many other things in life. That
ready for my conspiracy.
Rubbing my hands together.
Ties back directly to a Golden Girls episode for Carly. So yeah, let's hear this.
It's like that joke about, do you remember that part in Harry Potter? And they're like, I remember every part. Continue. That's me, but with the goddamn Golden Girls. So go ahead.
Yes.
So they present themselves to Sophia as a brother and sister. And the brother is looking for a wife, and Sophia is potentially going to be his partner. And then as the episode unfolds, we find out that they are not brother and sister. They are husband and wife, and that she knows that she is going to pass away soon and is trying to set her husband up with someone who will be able to take care of him after she's gone. That's the vibe I'm getting. That's the vibe I'm getting from these two.
Shane is trying to solidify a relationship for Ashley before this medical issue becomes a complete problem for him.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something to keep an eye on. I you know, obviously we don't want to speculate too much on
it's dark.
Something like that before it's revealed. Yeah. It is. Okay. Well, I don't. I'm a different brand, and that's okay. I will be interested to see in the sex and gender differences and things that add so much texture to that. And so it's very interesting, right? It's going to be a heck of a thing to watch. It really, really is. So I'm excited in a way. You know, I almost hate to say that considering the subject potential subject matter, but we'll see.
I hate to say this too, but sometimes it's nice to not get all of the information up front, right? When we're watching something. And this is one of those situations where now it feels like maybe things are starting to make sense when they were very, very, very confusing for six episodes. Mm-hmm. All right. That is everyone, at least everyone who was on this week, unless you want to briefly give us your thoughts on the Davis family.
Oh, yeah. The other Danielle.
Oh, golly. Oh, crap. What do I say? I kind of like them a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of like them. I as much as I like anybody on reality TV, you know what I mean? they fascinate me. It's just like I kind of touched upon it a little bit, right? About the tumultuous nature of things, right? Of bringing in additional spouses and somebody going, all right, I'm going to dip, you know, and oh, surprise, I'm back and all that stuff. I mostly just respect the absolute zero fucks of having the world's largest bed.
A 12 footer.
Lean into it. Yeah. You know, quit messing around. Get an enormous, like cartoonishly large bed, and just you know, I just loved it. I thought, there you go. This, when I first sat down as a young man to watch Sister Wives, this is more what I thought I would be getting, for better or worse.
They are unapologetically themselves, that's for sure.
Well, did you catch the preview for next week, though, where they do start in with the dating, and it probably is a little too much for Danielle? And if looks could kill, buddy, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
It's going to emote a lot throughout the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. And y'all know me well enough at this point, you two. I'm an easy mark for things. And so when she got broken up about not being able to brush Vera's teeth, like it got me. And so I really respect the fact that she was like, look, under no circumstances will I ever do this again. And it's like, next time she probably does it again. Like, I respect that. I respect being an agent of chaos. I really do. And so there's a part of me that really, that's very appealing to. And also just, again, just the lack of perhaps either discussing or maybe discussing, but not agreeing to, it seemed like with the Davis family, right? That everybody was on board and knew what they were getting into, but then the reality of it. Because so much of Sister Wives itself, and I used to talk about this, and maybe I'll talk about it again sometime, is role loss for Christine. You know, when Robin entered the family, Christine was no longer the last wife, the completing wife, the missing piece that made it work. And I don't think Christine, and this isn't a criticism, but I don't think Christine ever found her new role mm-hmm. once she was no longer the final completing wife. And that's not by any means entirely her fault either, right? It's a communicative negotiation in a family. But yeah, so I hate to say this stuff's fun, but come on, let's admit this is so fun.
I feel like Danielle won't be leaving on this one, and now she's going to stick to it and make this a miserable process for everyone else. So that's my
that's your again, hope.
That's my hope.
Which I respect.
Yes, absolutely. To say, if you guys want to date so bad, then let's date.
Yeah, like don't be part of the problem. Be the entire problem.
Right.
There's a lot of dating going on the next episode because the Davises decide if they're ready to start dating again. The Salahuddins go on a date with a much younger woman. Devastated, the Ryans arrive home questioning their lifestyle. Yerrick and Danielle fight when Danielle grows wary of Natalia's motives.
Wow, wow, wow.
It's going to only get better from here.
I can't wait.
Thank you so much for joining us and talking through this, Adam. And can you tell everyone where they can find your podcast and all those good things?
Yeah, so you can find me on just about any place that streams podcasts. It's the Sister Wives Professor. I'm also somewhat active on Facebook. If you look up the Sister Wives Professor on Facebook, that's me. And I'll at least update you when stuff drops. And every once in a while, I just need to talk to people who aren't my children. And so I might just ask random questions and try to engage people on there, including recently, I asked on Facebook at my wife's insistence, who is everybody's favorite Disney prince based upon how dreamy they are. So Corey and Carly, if you have an answer, I would love to hear it. But, you know, it's typically whatever his name is from Tangled seem to be. I don't even
really
know his name.
Really? I feel like yeah. I've seen Tangled one time.
Yeah. And for dreaminess, I don't think he would qualify under dreaminess standards. I don't think. Not that I would have a preference for that, you know.
Have you seen Tangled?
I have seen Tangled. Yeah.
What, one time?
One time. Yep, just about. Just about one time. So, but he seemed like a very real, rooted in reality, not so dreamy, but I think he was kind of a rescuing factor there because of her horrible situation for, you know, the Rapunzel type story.
Some ladies, with respect, and there's nothing wrong with this, like a safe scoundrel. It's just a type. And the other one overwhelmingly was Li Shang from Mulan, which is objectively the correct answer.
I think you got Carly on that one. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Be a man. Come on, give me a break. That's good stuff.
And in the Chinese version, that is sung by Jackie Chan.
Corey, why do you know these things?
Because Jackie Chan's awesome.
You always got to one-up me on shit. Like,
no,
fine,
no. We're on the same team, Adam. We're on the same team.
You both know too much.
I know. Well, we didn't talk about, we talked about this on the podcast that didn't end up manifesting, but some people still believe that you and I are the same person. So.
It's true. Yeah, this was a very difficult episode to record and edit, as we all know. With me playing two roles today.
Yes. Equally difficult for the both of us. Yeah.
Right. It was, yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we're excited to talk about season two recap with you on your
Absolutely.
Podcast as well.
Yeah. It's a different world back then. It was a simpler time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.